Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You're listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is July 11th, 2014. Hope you had a great holiday weekend last week. I missed being with you all. And a shout out to Tina Marie for another great show today. Thanks for being here with your wisdom and your insight. Now, today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. Susan is the author of two books based on A Course in Miracles, Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness, and Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want, both available on Amazon.com. Now, she's a co-founder of the School of Reason for A Course in Miracles, and she facilitates an ACIM study group in Denver, Colorado. Now, as you're listening to the show today, I invite you to join us in the 1-2 Radio chat room on Facebook. And of course, one of the easiest ways to get there is to go to the 1-2radio.com website, and on the left side of the page, click the chat button. It will be automatically redirected to our private group on Facebook. Now, if you're not already a member, just hit the button that says join and come on in to the 1-2 Radio chat room. On today's show, we are going to use workbook lesson 136 as our jumping off point. This is sickness is a defense against the truth. Now, this truly is one of the more pivotal lessons in the workbook in that it incorporates so many of the core tenets of A Course in Miracles, including a really clear reminder of the purpose of the ego, which is to keep us focused on our bodies, to keep our attention always on external events so that we forget that we have a mind, so that we forget that we're the decision maker. Now, the purpose of the ego is actually quite simple, to keep us mindless. And if you're anything like me, the minute you hear the title of this lesson, Sickness is a Defense Against the Truth, your mind starts whirling. I'm ready with instant comebacks. What a ridiculous statement. What the heck is he talking about? So with a very deep breath, sit back and relax, and let's consider a change of mind. I'm so happy to have Susan here today with the words of experience and wisdom to help us remember our right minds. So welcome, Susan.
Hi, CA. It's really nice to be here again.
And welcome your little dog, too.
I was thinking as you were talking, and barking is a defense against the truth as well. And well, I apologize. We have some people in our yard that are doing injections on our trees. And, of course, they just arrived just as the show was starting. So I'm going to try to ignore them, but I might have to go. If they ring the doorbell again, I might have to go and just say, quiet, I told you quiet, but so I apologize.
Okay. Well, and in fact, you know, it was kind of funny because I was thinking actually that it's, you know, when you get to a lesson like this, I mean, I start throwing up all kinds of defenses, and it was almost as if the dog started barking, going, okay, we're not going to talk about that. We're not going to listen to this. You know, we are
exactly
going to put this out of our minds. And so every single thing really can be our curriculum.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, and lesson 136, I mean, really, it is, you know, it uses the term sickness, but again, it's really everything. This is a sick illusion that
yes,
we've created, a sick world that we've created, and, you know, that's really all happening in the mind outside this dream. And so, really, everything that we do to distract ourselves, you know, becoming ill, becoming angry, depressed, anxious, you know, aging is really all a defense against the truth, because it's all about trying to make the dream of me, you know, real, and mm-hmm. and the belief that we could fragment perfect wholeness and be separate from God real, and that would be a, you know, an okay thing, and
right.
And to deny that is what really is causing our real sickness, our suffering. You know, which is the feeling that everyone has of this horrible guilt and this feeling of being walking around feeling bereft as a result of that you know loss, seeming loss and but it's the denial of that we're constantly doing through symptoms. Mm-hmm. You know, specifically this lesson talks about symptoms, and one of the reasons that I was interested in I've been sort of on a crash course with this lesson and some of the Course's teachings on healing for the last couple months, because I've had sort of a digestive kind of thing that doesn't you know, is just tricky and isn't resolving, and no tests are really, you know, there's no real
conclusive.
Cause.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and so all that stuff. But at the same time, it's disruptive enough of your daily living to be quite distracting, you know. And so I've been really looking at that whole idea of, you know, what is what the Course saying about healing, and what is the Course saying about the body? Mm-hmm. And yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and I'm glad you offered that, because I wanted to ask you. I know that even in your Tuesday night group, I think you did this in one of the last couple mm-hmm. of weeks. And I thought, okay, now why is she on this? What's triggering this? So I'm glad that you offered that.
Right.
You
know, well,
what's got you on to studying these lessons, looking at these issues, etc.?
Right. Well, that helped me. I mean, that prompted me to go deeper, I think. But we are in my Tuesday night class, Kaylee. we are in my Tuesday night class doing the early sections of the text, and chapter 2 is an amazing, even as early on as that is, and this was, you know, very, very early in the scribing of it, and a lot of this information was being given more directly to Helen and Bill, but he talks a lot about the body and healing, and, you know, this chapter 2 is sort of another one of those microcosms of every theme in the Course, and some of the more important statements about the body and healing and the compromise approach that the Course recommends, because it's not asking us to deny our bodies. Mm-hmm. You know, in our dream, in our physical reality, as I said, you know, everyone knows that pain is very distracting, and it would be very unkind of us to, and people make that mistake with the Course, to you know, just repeat robotically that I am not a body, I am free, which is one of the repeated workbook lessons, and when we're not there yet.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so, you know, so you have to, and most of us are not there yet. I mean, it's only at the very top of the ladder when all of these barriers to our, you know, to the truth of what we are, to love's presence, are undone through this practice of forgiveness, that we are really having an experience of what the Course calls the real world, in which we're here, but we are not no longer identified with that person we see in the mirror. And mm-hmm. and realize that there that it's, you know, smile at the thought that it needs defense. But until we're there, you know, we need to do whatever we need to do. But it's a matter of which teacher we're going to choose to do it with. You know, of the two inner teachers that we have, the ego that's been our inner teacher for most of us, you know, as long as we can remember, which is always trying to make the body real, to make the idea of separation. And you know, the idea that we pulled off this, or the belief that we pulled off this colossal sin against God. Who? Right. Exactly. Right. And you know, set up our own kingdom. And or, you know, we're learning now that we have a choice. We're learning now that we are a decision-making mind. We're beginning to at least entertain that possibility that there's more to me than this body, and that, you know, I have a choice outside the mind, which is really where all of this is happening, even though I don't fully believe that yet, to side with a part of my mind, to choose the teacher of healing, of forgiveness, Jesus, Holy Spirit, are the symbols that the Course uses. And when I actively make the choice, even in the condition I think I'm in, to choose that teacher, then I can have a glimpse of the reality that I am much more than a body, and I'm safe. I'm held, I'm healed, mm-hmm. I'm whole. And, you know, what I've been experiencing is when I'm willing to do that, which is not often, you know, I mean, I am, but it's the result of a lot of struggle against it.
Right.
A lot of kicking my heels and going into fear. It's really fear for which comes up for me. Well, what if there's something really wrong, you know, like that, and I have to pay attention to, and I have to, you know, I need to seek another form of healing, and you get kind of frantic about your body, you know,
right.
and so the end result of that practice and willingness to stay with it and ask, just as we ask to know what true forgiveness is, to ask what is true healing, you know, where is true healing, where am I, And mm-hmm. and to be open to that, what I've found, and this lesson talks about, then it says healing will flash across your mind. And it's healing of the mind about right. the idea of sickness and separation. And it's complete release and relief. And what we know that we are there when the body recedes in importance, it says in this lesson, you know, that the body doesn't feel anything really, you know. And so the pain, you may still be having those symptoms, but it's not important. It isn't interfering with your sense of peace and safety and being held and being, you know, endlessly supported. And so mm-hmm. that is what we're trying to learn, because in the end, the bodies are, you know, bodies are programmed to they're going to die. You know, they're imaginary. They're imaginary defenses. And so, mm-hmm. you know, we will all come to a point of dying, but we will have, if we practice this, we will be able to, you know, ultimately at the end of this journey, have the choice of laying our body down gently without suffering.
Right.
And that's what we would all want. You know, that would be a beautiful way to die, to know that nothing is dying, and that you're just, you know, finally, and you've already, really what precedes the putting down of the body is you've already stepped into the real world in which you're ready to really embrace the you know, magnificent, boundless beauty and love of our true nature that includes everyone, that has no speck of hate left.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love what you said about the compromise, because I think that is so important, that we tend to be extremist. And I even think that a lot of people who study A Course in Miracles, maybe we are extremist to start with, because this is such a radical approach. And as we follow the logic of the Course in Miracles and what this all means, it's easy to go to one extreme and say, well, there is no body. I am not a body. I am whole, or I, you know, whatever, you know, we say. And yet the Course really says, but we get, you know, you can't do this. This is a step-by-step process, and a compromise is important. You know, we do need to compromise. So, for instance, if I've got a raging headache, I may intellectually say, okay, sickness is a defense against the truth. It's my mind that needs to be healed. It's not my body. But it's hard to concentrate on that with a raging headache. So if I take an aspirin, if I put my faith in the aspirin to help, then I can actually come back to a place of more peace and wholeness and really consider, what does this mean that my mind created this, or that I am a mind and I'm a decision maker? So I love that whole idea that we don't have to do this all in one step, but that it really is a step-by-step process.
Absolutely. It's a journey. And you know, again, it's only at the very top of the ladder that we really know that we're not a body. And so, at, just as you said, that's exactly right, that, you know, the kindest thing, even for our process, our path, is to calm the body down so that we can not be distracted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would, you know, it's silly. It's just silly to suffer in pain to try to prove that you don't believe that
that you're not,
you know,
a body.
I mean, when that's not true, you know. And so, and it actually, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to read a couple of sentences from chapter 2 that talk about that.
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
And you know, because that's a huge mistake that Course students make, and Ken Wapnick talked about it a lot. You know, this trying to sort of prove that you're further along than you are, and you know, this is a perfect example of the kinds of things that we do with that. Mm-hmm. And Jesus, right at the very beginning, this is in section 4, healing as release from fear, in chapter 2, is cautioning us against doing that. And he says, the body is merely part of your experience in the physical world. Its abilities can be and frequently are over-evaluated. Understatement on his part.
Yeah.
However, he does that a lot in these early chapters. However, yeah. It is almost impossible to deny its existence in this world. Those who do so are engaging in a particularly unworthy form of denial. The term unworthy here implies only that it is not necessary to protect the mind by denying the unmindful. If one denies this unfortunate aspect of the mind's power, one is also denying the power itself. So, you know, I mean, we're growing into the understanding that we're a mind and that we have the power to change our mind, but we don't know that for a long time. You know, we're kind of going on blind faith with this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're learning through glimpses, through the practice, that that true healing, that true forgiveness, that true release and relief, and the sense of being innocent and loved and loving is available to us as a moment-to-moment choice when we choose, you know, when we change teachers. But that's being unveiled to us as we go along, and it's part of that moment-to-moment practice. So what happens for most of us is when the, you know, when our body's threatened or the body of a loved one seems threatened, our fear comes about that of disappearing, really, you know, is mm-hmm. what we're afraid of, is triggered. And so, you know, we need to work with that on the level of form and do what's the normal people would do. You know, and everybody thinks, you know, some things work for some people, again, because of the power of the mind. What you're, you know, I tend to gravitate towards some alternative things, but Western medicine, there's not one that's good. You know, it's an illusion.
Right.
So it doesn't matter
right.
what you choose, but whatever works for you, you know, go ahead and do it. But at the same time, do your healing work, do your forgiveness work, work with your teacher to look at how frightened you are, to look at the causes, the real cause of that fear, which is nothing to do with the body. And, you know, the Course says nothing can be really solved at the symptom level because it has to be taken back to the cause, and the cause is not in the body. And, you know, the body may enjoy temporary healing because we are giving it that, our mind is giving it that power, but really, you know, ultimately, that's not where our salvation lies, for sure.
Right, so, and that's not where healing is, because it's the mind that is sick, it's not the body.
That's exactly right. And he talks about that. I'll just read a couple more if it's okay.
Oh, yeah. I love
and
it.
He says, yeah, so this is also from chapter 2. I think I'll read the whole paragraph because he explains this whole thing. So he says, all material means that you accept as remedies for bodily ills are restatements of magic principles. And magic in the Course is, you know, trying to solve a problem where it is not. So anything is that we really, you know, food is magic.
Right.
medicine is magic. You know, anything that we do really to kind of bolster this physical and emotional self. This is the first step in believing that the body makes its own illness. It is a second misstep to attempt to heal it through non-creative agents, magic. It does not follow, however, that the use of such agents for corrective purposes is evil. Sometimes the illness has a sufficiently strong hold over the mind to render a person temporarily inaccessible to the atonement. And again, that's understatement. The sometimes, you know, almost always.
Yeah.
The illness has a sufficiently strong hold over the mind to render a person temporarily inaccessible to the atonement. In this case, it may be wise to utilize a compromise approach to mind and body in which something from the outside is temporarily given healing belief. This is because the last thing that can help the non-right-minded or the sick is an increase in fear. They are already in a fear-weakened state if they are prematurely exposed to a miracle, to healing. They may be precipitated into panic. This is likely to occur when upside-down perception has induced the belief that miracles are frightening. So again, it's that we're afraid of the power of our mind. If we could just, you know, instantly join with Jesus and realize that we're not a body, that would scare the hell out of us, because what does that mean? You know, that goes against, I mean, what that would be like, be where the Course says, you know, be not afraid, and I'm paraphrasing here, but that you will be hurled into reality.
Right.
You know, being hurled into reality, you know, shaken, Jesus doesn't try to shake us awake. That would be really too frightening for us. He's, you know, it's this gradual process wherein, using the dream metaphor, wherein happier dreams begin to replace, forgiving dreams, healing dreams begin to replace all of the nightmares that we're making up. And so, you know, this is a process, and along the way, we use a compromise approach. But the important thing is that while we, to look at our fear with Jesus as our teacher, with Jesus beside us, and to ask to learn, to entertain the possibility that I'm doing all of these things for my body that, you know, seem to be the normal things to do to heal the body. But the real healing is, you know, let me join with your awareness that the real healing is happening in my mind. You know, let my mind be truly healed today, Lesson 136 says. And, you know, so I've been working with that for, 2 months.
Yeah.
It's not again about form. So, you know, this condition seems to be gradually finding more balance and so forth, but it certainly hasn't been an instant healing. And what it's given me the opportunity to do is to really look at my fear of the mind, which is really what we need to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We need to see that there's a part of me. What does that mean for me? You know, that's what we're afraid of. What does it mean for my identity? If I'm not a body, I don't know yet what it means to be a mom.
Then, what does that really mean? It's sort of like even sometimes when we're kids, but I mean, I think we do it now and we say, what is heaven? You know, as a child, it was always, we want to go to heaven, but then it's like, well, what is really there? What does that look like?
Well, yeah, and if you read the Bible, you're like really ambivalent about it, right?
Yeah, and so it's sort of like, even though we still play, you know, I pay a lot of lip service to this, it's like, well, what does that really mean? Like you say, ultimately, it's this scary thought, if I'm going to disappear.
Yes, exactly.
And what am I going to disappear into? And I want a little bit more of a guarantee of what I'm going to disappear into.
Right, right. And I'm glad, I'm glad you said that, because what really came to me through this process too was that what I'm really afraid of there's a part of us that really, you know, we are attracted to guilt. And the thing that makes guilt real is punishment of some kind. So we don't care, you know, what we project that punishment onto, if it's someone else's body, if it's my body, as long as it makes that guilt, keeps that guilt real. And so there is this sense, you know, what really came up for me was that there's a part of me that really wants to be punished because that makes me real, you know? That makes my sin against God real. And our allegiance to that idea is so much deeper than we can fathom, you know, intellectually. It really, that's why this, again, is, you know, we've been working with this course. We read it, we understand it, we understand the metaphysics now, and yet, you know, why aren't we at peace all the time? Well, you know, that's why. Because we want to keep that guilt going, and we want to keep because that's what holds the idea of me in place. And so, you know, as I was working with, and I think illness brings up a great opportunity to work with really looking at that attraction to guilt and really looking at my attraction to wanting to be punished for it, because that makes it real. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and asking for healing around that, you know, that has helped me to heal my mind about that, because that's where it's happening. And if I can look at that with Jesus from his perspective in the mind, then it does become, that's where that's where the healing flashes across our mind, and it's, we're safe, and we know it, we experience it. You know, it doesn't last because we go running back into the defense of sickness, but it, you know, the sickness of the mind, but it's there.
Right. And even on a more physical, or what I would consider a more mundane level, think how often we do that. And what I'm thinking is, even though we may not consciously say, I'm going to punish everybody around me by being sick, we do. It's sort of like, you made me unhappy and look at me. I've got a cold. Did you know I've had the flu? Did you know I've been in the hospital? Did you know I was sick? And, you know, it's kind of this weird thing of, I'm the victim here. You know,
Absolutely. That's it. Yeah.
I'm not responsible. I'm the victim here. And I think that whether we do it consciously or unconsciously, we do it a lot. Whether or not it's just to get attention or whatever it is, I mean, I see it a lot. And, you know, kind of going off of that a little bit, maybe this is going astray, but some of the statements in this lesson I just think are astounding. And if you just take them and think about what this means, you know, we apply it to so many things in our life. Like, for instance, sickness is not an accident.
Right.
And defenses are not unintentional. And in fact, it even says they are secret magic wands that you wave when the truth appears to threaten what you would believe. You know,
exactly.
And so when the truth gets anywhere near your mind that we are responsible, that we are decision makers, that maybe we have decided against God, then all of a sudden we can come up with all of this stuff. But I also love, the one thing I point out to people that I love about this lesson is if you've ever studied logic as a philosophy, or just the whole idea of logic, if this, then that, this lesson really follows that, because it just keeps building on, if this is true, then that's got to be true. And if this is true, then that's got to be true. So if you, you know, if sin isn't real, and if your body isn't real, and this is all in your mind, then how can you really be sick? And it just kind of keeps taking us down this path to really focus on each of these issues until you kind of get to the point, well, that's it. What are you defending against if there's nothing to defend against?
Absolutely.
You know, and I love that. And yet, you know, once again, sickness is a decision. But you know what I also love about this lesson is how it reminds us that we're very conscious. We make these choices on purpose. You know, we're not unconscious when we make these choices. But in order for them to really work, we have to forget that we made them.
Right.
Because that's the only way we're going to successfully feel like the victim and feel like, yes, look at what's happened to us, or you made me feel this way, or poor me, and look at what's happening to me. The only way we can really do that is if we forget we made the decision.
Absolutely. And
it's, I love it's, it. It's perfect.
Yeah. No, it is well, in the ego, within the ego insane thought system, yes, it's perfect. And, you know, we're playing a game of guilt, and whoever gets to be the biggest victim wins, you know? So,
yes. So
that's our, you know, look at me. And it's, and I, the point that you made earlier about, you know, it's a way of separating ourselves from other people. It's a way of punishing other people when we're sick. You know, look what kind of, I mean, very often we're pointing a finger at someone that, you know, look what like living with you did to me, right?
Yeah.
And, or to just say, I've had enough of you, you know, now you have to go away now, right? And really what we're pushing away, it's like, we're saying that to Jesus. It's like, I've had enough of you, you know, I can't come out and play today because I'm sick. Go away,
right.
You know? So it's that, and that's what, those passages that you were referring to, can I just read a little bit further on that?
Defenses are not, please do.
Defenses are not unintentional, nor are they made without awareness. They are secret magic wands you wave when truth appears to threaten what you believe. They seem to be unconscious, but because of the rapidity with which you choose to use them, in that second, even less, in which the choice is made, you recognize exactly what you would attempt to do and then proceed to think that it is done. And so it is that idea of, you know, when we become a little bit, you know, we waive these defenses, really, when we have a glimpse of the fact that we are not bodies. You know, when we are, especially for those of us on this path, when we're working with this practice, we go, you know, we do have glimpses with Jesus when we're above the battleground and we're not identified. We're in the holy instant. We're outside time and space. We know that love survived for everyone. We know that this is just a story, and that we experience the peace and the, you know, the endless innocence and comfort of that, and it terrifies us, again, because what does that mean for me? And and so, you know, we go running back to our friend the ego, and we will, you know, we become sick, we experience some kind of incoming attack from someone else, you know. We're depressed, we are, you know, something is wrong. And it's always, we're always pointing an external finger to what's wrong. And, you know, with sickness, I'm trying to find the cause, you know. Is it a microbe? Is it a gluten intolerance? Is it, you know what I mean? It's like all of these. I mean, it just goes on and on. And, you know, at some point, you really have to, I mean, if you're doing this path and you really want to learn this, it does become absurd at some point. You know, how mindless we become and how much energy we throw at trying to solve a problem where it is not.
Right.
You know,
And like I said, and we do it all the time. If we just look at life, how often, you know, we have an issue, but we're totally distracted into trying to solve something else instead of just solving what's really in front of us.
Absolutely.
In fact, in this lesson, in the next paragraph after what you were reading, yep. I love this line too, where it says, defenses must make facts unrecognizable.
Right.
And it's like, how excellent is that? When we have those defenses, whether those defenses are sickness or whether they're judgment or whatever the defense is, it literally makes facts unrecognizable to us.
Right.
There's no way we're really going to see what's going on.
We become completely mindless.
Yes.
And we're completely at, you know, we're at the mercy, seemingly, of the ego thought system, having completely forgotten that we, you know, bought it hook, line, and sinker. And again, that it was a decision, you know. And that is, well, you know, he says too, paragraph 5, it is this quick forgetting of the part you play in making your quote-unquote reality that makes defenses seem to be beyond your own control.
Right.
It's
not my fault, Susan.
It's not my fault, right. And it doesn't seem to be. I mean, we really don't remember that decision. You know, it's completely dissociated.
Right.
So, and he says, but what you have found, what you have forgot, can be remembered given willingness to reconsider the decision, which is doubly shielded by oblivion, which is the idea of guilt is the first shield, and then the world of bodies is the second shield, the idea of me.
Yes.
You know? So it's always this, it's really, he's trying to, and I love what you said about the logic here too, because yes, he's trying to, Jesus uses reason with us throughout, and Helen was a very logical thinker as well, but he's really, you know, laying out a case for the fact of, you know, how can this be? If this is all happening in the mind, if the body is in the mind, you know, and that there is no mind in the body, then how can you know, treatments at the symptom level really mean anything at all?
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm. But like in one, I'm going to read one more paragraph and see, and this helps make it clear too. It says, every defense takes fragments of the whole, assembles them without regard to their true relationship, and thus constructs illusions of a whole that isn't there. It is this process that imposes threat and not whatever outcome may result. When parts are wrested from the whole and seen as separate and as wholes within themselves, they become symbols standing for attack upon the whole, successful in effect and never to be seen as whole again. And see, and I think once again, we do that in so many areas of our lives. We take one little piece and we're not talking about that thing or looking at that thing in relationship to everything else. We just make it stand all on its own and then say, see how this works? You know, and it defies logic.
Right, and we give it all the meaning that it has for us, you know.
Yes.
And the meaning and the purpose of it, again, is always to reinforce this. I mean, that paragraph that you just read completely describes the ego thought system, which is that we've fragmented wholeness and we've made the, you know, and we've given importance to each of the parts and all of that. So in everything that we do, we're reenacting that original belief that happened and trying to reinforce it and make it real. And, you know, I mean, Jesus is just kind of saying, you know, this is a decision. That next paragraph starts out, sickness is a decision. It is not a thing that happens to you quite unsought, which makes you weak and brings you suffering. It is a choice you make, a plan you lay. when foreign instant truth arises in your own deluded mind, and all your world appears to totter and prepare to fall.
Yes.
So again, it's that, you know, for people who are practicing the Course too, especially, I think, this is a process of learning that we're a decision-making mind outside this dream, and we have two teachers, and we are choosing every moment between the two teachers. And, you know, I am noticing in my own practice that paying attention to what preceded whatever sickness seems to be appearing, you know, in mm-hmm. my dream. Very often, if you start paying attention to that, you will see that you had an experience of right-mindedness.
Yes.
And then you became, you
know. And your ego got darn scared.
Your ego got darn scared. And you know, what I mean, I have found it in, you know, 10 years into this, really practicing it over time. I've had a lot of, been able to allow the undoing and choose the undoing and release of a lot of my projections in my special relationships. I feel a lot more tolerant. I feel more compassion and sameness when things come up. And so that sameness and saneness and when so, but so that's been a very positive healing thing, but it's also a frightening thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, very often we experience that peace that everyone is innocent and that we're all the same. And then it's just like, oh, wait a minute, you know, and we go running and we don't remember that we ran back to our friend, the ego, but all of a sudden we're sick. We're really sick. And it's going to be, you know, perhaps really difficult to solve the sickness at
right.
the symptom level. And so it's going to be very distracting. It's going to take up a lot of our time. And what does that achieve? It keeps, you know, it keeps us from remembering that we have a part of our mind that we can, another teacher that we can go through this with, experience this with, and the experience will be, you know, what we will either feel peaceful if we're choosing that teacher, or we're going to feel frantic and frightened if we're choosing the ego. It's not about
yes.
the form.
Well, and what I always like to go back to, I think it's lesson 5, which is I'm never upset for the reason I think.
Right.
And exactly. I'll tell you what, sometimes that pisses me off. I mean, if I can speak in the vernacular.
That understatement?
Like, yeah, because it's sort of like, what do you mean? This is what's upsetting me. It's like, no, it's not. You're never upset for the reason you think. I mean, and then, you know, that lesson kind of forces me to go back. Okay, then what are you really upset about? What do you really need to look at here? Which kind of goes back, by the way, to the very first line of this lesson, which is no one can heal unless he understands what purpose sickness seems to serve.
Exactly.
And that's what we never really seem to get at, or it takes us a long time to get at, is what is the real purpose of sickness? You know, and in the Course a lot, we're asked to do that. Anything that comes up for us, what is the purpose of this? What are we using it for?
Absolutely. And that will tell you which teacher you chose, right? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the purpose mm-hmm. of the purpose of sickness of any kind is to prove that I'm a body, not a mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it does a good job of that. It has very, you know, the ego's propaganda for itself, the Course calls it, is very convincing. It's still a lie.
Mm-hmm. But it's very good.
He's a great salesman. And, you know, again, that ego, I'm speaking as though the ego is some sort of separate entity, but it's just a part of our mind. But you know, sometimes it feels like a separate entity because, again, we want to deny that we're the decision maker. So we feel like that, you know, oh, the ego came up again, you know.
Yeah, the ego did this.
That ego made me do it, you know. And you're, but it is the same practice, as you're saying, of forgiveness and healing are synonyms. Uh-huh. You know, one has a slightly different, I mean, healing has more of an emphasis on emotional and physical sickness. But and forgiveness has more of an emphasis on our relationships, but the process is exactly the same. And the process of forgiveness and healing is, again, lesson 5. I'm not upset for the reason I think. I'm not sick for the reason I think. And then lesson 34, I could see peace instead of this. I have a part of my mind that, you know, I could experience healing instead of this.
Mm-hmm.
And if I am still agitated, fearful, upset, angry, whatever, then there's a part of me that isn't ready yet. You know, I'm scared. What I'm really mm-hmm. scared of is the love. I'm really scared of choosing the peace. Because what is it?
What
for
fun
me?
Would that be?
Right. And then I don't get to be a victim, right? And then I don't get, you know. So yes, it's serving my grievances in my relationships, whatever I'm experiencing in my body, both serve the same purpose, which is to prove that I exist, but it's not my fault. It's something or someone else's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, we're all operating under the with the secret purpose of, you know, the whoever gets to be the biggest victim wins the game of guilt.
Right. We do. And it's hard to give up our addiction to that.
Right. And it is an addiction. And addiction, of course, is a defense against the truth.
Right.
So.
Well, now I want to ask you a question, and I'm trying to figure out exactly how to articulate it. And it's one of these things I have a feeling you're going, CA, that's not the point. But I think it's what most of us feel, which is, and this is what gets confusing. I know that we don't come to this like we're looking for a healing in the body. But do you believe, or in your experience, as people really work with forgiveness, and as they really work with healing their minds, do you believe that you see healing on a physical level, or is it what you were talking about before, that it's not whether or not it's a healing of the body, it's that you don't care as much?
You know, I mean, again, I think that people may experience it that way, you know, because again, that passage, I'm looking again for that passage that I read, it's not the purpose of this,
mm-hmm.
but in a fear-weakened state, you may put in your dream that this healed you,
mm-hmm.
but it's never in the course really about the healing of the body, you know. So again, it's whatever will be most helpful to you wherever you are in your atonement path. That's my understanding. Will be what you experience, but it isn't. The body can't be healed. Because the body can't be sick, because the body isn't.
Right.
So again, it's all, you know, I think, you know, the Song of Prayer pamphlet talks about healing and was brought in as the a correction for mistakes people were already making with the Course. And Helen and Bill were always very often in the beginning, especially using the Course, you know, using Jesus as sort of a personal valet, you know,
uh-huh, right.
to get parking space, or to they were in New York, but to hail cabs and to find the right, you know, with Helen, something that she wanted in a department store, you know, shopping, some kind of wonderful bargain or whatever. And you know, that your mind can play with that, but it's not the purpose of the Course. The purpose of the Course is to learn that all healing and everything that's happening is in the mind. So that's an impossible question to really answer in terms of how people will experience it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. But the you know, again, I think it will be whatever is most helpful to you. If you're honestly opening to the healing of your mind about this, and you know. And in a very fearful state, you know, I think it may come to you in you know, a way that will be very comforting to you. Mm-hmm. But it's not like Jesus is, you know, helping us from outside the dream with our bodies. It's
right.
Our dream.
Right. Well, and I think that there again, that's something that I think is important to always keep front and center, because I think it's something that's difficult, because it goes exactly against what we think of in the world, which is
right.
We don't bring Jesus into the dream. We bring our dreams to Jesus.
Exactly.
And that is just opposite of every single thing that we think and that we do. And because we're always thinking in terms of this is what's going on and I'm calling for help. I need help in understanding this, or I need, you know, I just need help, whether that's from an angel or an ascended master or my best friend or my grandmother who's passed over. I'm always looking for help in the dream, which there's nothing wrong with that. But ultimately in the Course, it's to remember that we are in a dream, and we bring the dreams, we bring the nightmares to Jesus. We don't
yes.
bring him into it thinking that he's going to go, oh yeah, we got to clean this up.
Right, exactly.
You know, he's not going to clean it up, because it would be, I mean, I always go back to, I think it's the perfect analogy that the Course gives, which is, if you've got a child and that child is asleep in their bed and they're having a nightmare, the parents don't know it. You know, the parents aren't in the nightmare. They're not in the dream. Now, if the child wakes up and is scared, the parent will obviously hold the child and try to kind of slowly bring them back to reality, slowly wake them up. But the parent isn't in the dream and can't really do anything in the dream, because that's in the mind of the child. And when I think of it that way, then I get it. I get why God did not create the world, because I created this dream that I'm having. God doesn't even know I'm having this nightmare.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know? Yes. And again, it's all happening in the mind. I mean, from our perspective, CA, we can't really understand what that means.
Right.
You know, because we're so identified with our bodies. But again, we can have that willingness, that openness to entertain that possibility, and to invite the you know, I, as you said, to bring our fear and our dark illusions, our nightmares, to that principle, to that symbol, and ask to share that perspective from beyond the dream, and mm-hmm. and that is possible. That's, you know, that's what Jesus is asking us to do, and that will change our experience of the dream. It will change the our reaction mm-hmm. to the dream. And can I just read? You know, this is really the
sure.
part toward the end of this lesson. He gets into, you know, really, what is this about, and how will I know that I'm experiencing true healing? And so I'm going to read just the first sentence of paragraph 16 and then go to paragraph 17. Healing will flash across your open mind. Again, we've opened it to Jesus's perspective. We've really... you know, we've admitted that we're fearful, but we've brought that fear of our dream back to the light. So healing will flash across your open mind as peace and truth arise to take the place of war and vain imaginings. Now is the body healed, because the source of sickness, which is the belief in the body, has been opened to relief. And you will recognize you practiced well by this. The body should not feel at all. If you have been successful, there will be no sense of feeling ill or feeling well, of pain or pleasure. No response at all is in the mind to what the body does. Its usefulness remains and nothing more. Perhaps you do not realize that this removes the limits you had placed upon the body by the purposes you gave to it. As these are laid aside, the strength the body has will always be enough to serve all truly useful purposes. The body's health is fully guaranteed, because it is not limited by time, by weather or fatigue, by food and drink, or any laws you made it serve before. You need do nothing now to make it well, for sickness has become impossible. The idea of sickness has become impossible. He's not talking, you know, again, it's all happening in the mind, and it's about mm-hmm. you will, the body will have no power to frighten you, will have no power to interfere with your peace, and you'll be able to use it to demonstrate forgiveness, to demonstrate defenselessness, you know, to do whatever truly useful, you know, right-minded things. The body, and the Course says, the body, the right-minded use of the body is as a communication device to demonstrate the healing of the mind, to demonstrate that nothing victim or victimizer has had any effect on the true innocent love that we are.
That's right. It's kind of like an etch a sketch.
Yeah.
I mean, no matter what we do, yeah. It really isn't. It's so transient. It's never going to really affect who we truly are.
Yes, exactly. I'm laughing because I still do that. I have a smartphone and I still shake it now and then, hoping that it's like an etch-a-sketch, you know, when something goes wrong with it. Like, reset this thing. But I like that. Yeah, I mean, forgiveness is kind of like and healing or an etch-a-sketch that, you know, clears our mind of all of our, you know, crazy scribblings, right?
Right. And no matter how deep they are or how colorful they are, it's like, it's still nothing. I mean, you know, it always
it's
goes
still nothing, to, right.
Yeah, I always say anything times zero is still nothing.
Right.
It doesn't matter what you multiply times zero, it's still going to be nothing. So you can get all caught up in it, but it's still nothing.
Right, exactly.
It kind of goes back to the logic. If it doesn't exist in the first place, it doesn't matter what you do to it. It's never going to be anything.
Right, right. And the course, you know, in one of the lessons says, if pain is real, God is not. If God mm-hmm. is real, pain is not. So you know that is, and you know those two experiences of love. God is really just meaning abstract, all inclusive love. Eternal love, and or pain, that's the ego thought system, the pain of me,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's one or the other, and that will, I experience those as a result of which teacher I'm choosing at any given moment.
Right. Well, and the one thing, because it's crossed my mind a couple of times, I want to say this, and I recognize, too, we only have 5 minutes to close out the show, but okay. There is some place, and I believe it's in the text, where it says, never underestimate the power of your mind. And it's not talking so much about the positive side of your mind. It's saying, don't poo-poo this and think it's nothing. You know,
right.
Your mind, your ability to deny the truth, to put up all these defenses is an incredible thing because your mind is an incredible thing. So
right.
Never underestimate the power of your mind, you know, to choose the wrong teacher.
Right. You know? And it says something like, you know, do thoughts have power to bodies?
Right.
Yes. You know, and so, yes, I mean, God, I mean, goodness, look at what we have. In our dream, you know, in our collective dream. I mean, do hateful thoughts have power? Well, you know, look at the mass destruction that's
yes.
going on all the time at any given moment all over the world. And, you know, and very often in defense of God.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
you know, what is that
oh, yeah.
about, right?
Yes.
And you know, again, we made God in the ego's image to be the as a reflection of the hateful thought. Of you know, of destroying God. And, you know, so now we have a punishing God, and that's what I was saying about the, you know, we're always seeking punishment for someone. The ego doesn't care what we project that punishment in, but someone's got to be punished for this.
Somebody's got to pay, right.
Yep.
Okay,
yeah.
Susan, we have just a couple minutes to
okay.
wrap up the show today, and I want to thank you so much for being here. But mm-hmm. do you have anything you'd like to announce? I know you do your Tuesday night discussion group in Denver, Colorado, if anybody is interested in that. Anything
yes.
else that you would like to announce?
Well, no, and that's at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center from 7 to 8:30 here in Denver, and we're in early working on the text in the beginning and going all the way through the journey of the text through selected readings and you know, other bringing in, yeah, some of the lessons and other materials and Ken Wapnick recordings and so forth. It's been a lot of fun. And not really. I'm going to Temecula to the Foundation for A Course in Miracles this weekend. For next week, there's another week-long academy program, they call them, being taught by the staff there. And so I'm excited about that. And we'll probably, next time we talk, have some kind of fun theme related to that to discuss with you, which is always
oh, that'll be great.
So, yeah, yeah.
That will be great. So have a great time in Temecula, and
thank
I will
you.
Look forward to hearing about what you learned. So thank you so much for being here, Susan.
Thank you, CA. It's always fun.
Yes, it's great. I feel all jazzed up now today, which I needed to feel jazzed up because, I said, I've had a lot of forgiveness lessons lately.
Well, just get that Etch-a-Sketch out.
that's what I'm going to do. So thank you for the conversation. And also to all the listeners and those in the chat room, thank you for so many of your comments. I haven't had time to, you know, respond to all of them, but I'm certainly reading them. And so thank you, Vesela and Tracy and Gabriella and Peggy and Elizabeth and Suzanne and Gina and Christine and Denise and Lori. Thank you so much for being here today. And I am reading your comments, even if I'm not talking about them on the show. So thank you so much. And also thanks to to Scott Weaver, our producer. And also, I want to remind you that tomorrow is the 12th of the month. So we will be celebrating a number of things on 1-2-Listen, including a full moon in Capricorn. So you can watch for specials on 1-2-Listen.com and on 1-2 Academy. And I'm putting together a special time-based session. So watch for that. You can find that on my bio page on the 1-2-Listen.com site. Now you've got about 5 minutes to get yourself another cup of coffee or tea or whatever it is and be back in time for the Through Line with Christine Dumouriez coming up next on Fabulous Fridays on 1-2 Radio. So until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.